It's been 2.5 months since Russia invaded Ukraine. Talks haven't produced much as Russia steps up its military campaign, especially in the east. Some neighboring countries now fear possible Russian aggression against them, and others are concerned about the economic consequences of the war. NATO's presence in Lithuania has increased to around 3,000 soldiers, but Lithuania has joined other Baltic states in asking for more NATO forces. So is a Russian attack against other states imminent? And what will it take to guarantee security in the region?
Well, Germany was planning to increase its Russian natural gas imports through undersea pipelines. Lithuania had one goal, to break free, and it succeeded. In fact, Lithuania was the first EU country to cut completely from Russian gas. So how did they prepare the nation to survive without Russian energy, the biggest supplier in Europe? We'll put that to the Lithuanian president, Gitanas Nausėda, talks to Al Jazeera. Lithuanian President Gitanas Nausėda, thank you for talking to Al Jazeera.
It's a pleasure for me.
In the early morning of February 24, when Russia invaded Ukraine, what was your first thought?
It starts again. Probably was the first thought, because just yesterday, on the 23rd, we returned from Ukraine, where they were with the President Andrzej Duda, visiting Volodymyr Zelensky. And you know, this feeling of war was already in the air.
And we so talked. No surprise from your side?
There was no surprise. Of course, there was a small hope that maybe we will avoid this worst scenario, but probably it was too naive to expect that this concentration of Russian military forces around Ukraine is for nothing. Of course, there was a plan to implement this terrible idea to invade Ukraine and to try to occupy the whole country.
Who was the first person of NATO you called, and what did you ask for?
It's a very good question. I think we communicated so much this first week with all the leaders, and I think the next day we visited Brussels. We met on the European Union level, European Council. And I remember the speech of Volodymyr Zelensky on VGC. And you know, his expression was like this. Colleagues, maybe we talk for the last time. Maybe everything might happen in my country, especially in the first days. The feeling was like this.
But also in your country, right? You also...
My country is always under Russian pressure, and probably we used to live with such a situation, and you know, we are well prepared, or at least we try to prepare ourselves for any kind of aggression. This is not only a military aggression we are facing, or the threat we are facing, but energy blackmailing, economic pressure, and all these last 20 years we felt this pressure, and we tried to do our best in order to be ready to take such challenges.
But the very first day that Russia invaded Ukraine, did you think he's coming for Lithuania as well?
I think if Putin will be successful, he will come after us, and this is not only the talk about Lithuania. This is the next target might be Moldova, Romania, other Baltic countries, Poland.
Yes,
the appetite of this empire is just without any limits.
The deputy foreign minister of Poland talked to Al Jazeera in this show earlier that he thinks that certainly Putin is aiming also for Poland. Do you really think that he also wants to aim for Lithuania?
Yes, I think. I think this is possible, and only one scenario we could avoid Putin's aggression against our countries is successful for Ukrainians war in Ukraine. If Putin will be stopped there, yes, it will be probably the end of his era and probably will mean some relief for democratic countries in Europe.
As a country who was formerly part of the Soviet Union, do you feel that people, countries in Europe, for example Germany and other countries, underestimated the risks of Russia and Vladimir Putin?
I don't think that the word underestimated is correct one. I think it was just the feeling that Putin is better than we expect. And there was the illusion that we have to do business with Kremlin's regime no matter what is going on. And only this war in Ukraine opened the eyes entirely. And I think it was a game changer in this regard. And now I do not see any leader in European Union, maybe except one or two, who still thinks that for the war in Ukraine, Ukraine is responsible, or both countries are responsible. I think every country in European Union understands the true nature of this regime, and the content of this regime is just to be aggressive and to try to swallow neighboring countries.
But was it a mistake of the countries in Europe who had a different approach and were engaging with Vladimir Putin and Russia for a long time? And what have been the consequences, if you would call it a mistake?
You know, I don't know whether illusions are mistakes. Sometimes we want to have some illusions, yes? As a persons, as a countries, as a politicians. Fortunately, it was not the case in my country. Nobody has any illusions about the true intentions of Kremlin's regime. So this is the reason why we did our homework. We tried to prepare for possible such scenarios like we are witnessing now. And this was the reason why we were first to say, we are ready to cut off all the energy ties with Russia. It's a surprise because Lithuania, 30 years ago, was probably most reliant on Russian energy resources.
Yeah,
but
a quarter of
your
no gas.
Illusions, we implemented and we created all necessary infrastructure just one day to say nothing. This is the end, and we will not just finance from our pocket the war in Ukraine. This is our moral duty, and we are ready to fulfill it.
But a quarter of your gas was coming from Russia, right? I think 2 billion tons a year you need, and a quarter came from Russia. How are you now making the gas demand?
We can cover all our demand through the Klaipėda LNG terminal. It was established in 2014. We can satisfy our needs for crude oil through Būtingės terminal. It was built in 1999, so 23 years ago. And the largest oil refinery in Lithuania, in Mažeikiai, belongs to PKN Orlen, Polish company. And this company said, even before the war, that they will not buy Russian oil anymore. Although it created some technological problems for this company because they need so-called Ural type of oil. But they were ready to solve this.
But where is your gas now coming from?
And because you will need to buy our gas is coming from Norway, from United States, and we created all necessary infrastructure, deepened our ports to accommodate the ships from Qatar. So we have the agreement with Qatar Gas, and the Qatar gas will be provided to our LNG terminal too.
And plans to buy gas from Iran, for example?
So far, there are no discussions about the gas from Iran, but we, first of all, we would like to buy the gas from the countries who has, which have certain principles, values we share.
You were in Borodyanka in Ukraine on April 14, just after a lot of destruction happened there, a lot of people died. You compared the situation to it's worse than the Nazis. It was quite a statement, of course, because during the World War II, around 60 million people died. Why did you say that?
You know, we are able to see these pictures coming, and some one thing is to see the picture, another thing is just to experience it. And it was terrible finding how cruel are these atrocities committed by Russian regime there. To see destroyed houses, to see the parts of people in the streets. And you know, this experience was just shocking. And of course, my statement was very natural because I just said what I thought.
You would still say it like this?
Yes, absolutely. I think that those atrocities are terrible, not imaginable in 21st century. And those war crimes are not committing themselves. They are not fulfilling themselves because somebody is responsible for this. Regime, people, institutions. And even this idea of just to restore the former Soviet empire, this is probably the very beginning of those atrocities, because the people cannot understand that every country, every nation in Europe, and not only Europe, in the world, has a right to determine or to create its fate and to choose the way they want to go.
Talking about restoring the Soviet Union, we're now 2.5 months into the war. Are you now less concerned that there might be an invasion from Russia into Lithuania than 2.5 months ago? Or can we say that looking at how the war is developing, that the pace of the Russian invasion is not as we might have thought in the beginning?
You know, the formula is very simple. If Putin will succeed in Ukraine, nobody can feel safe. And the targets might be very different, and the targets might be even few of them at the same time. Not only one country, one target, but many targets. If he will be stopped there, probably it will be end of this affair. And as I mentioned, it is very important for the stability of the whole region.
One of the weakest points of NATO is considered to be in your country, the Suwalki Gap. It's the gap, a piece of land between the Russian exclave Kaliningrad and Belarus, which is backed by Russia. There have been suggestions on state TV in Russia that Russian troops should occupy that piece of land, which would basically mean that the Baltic states are cut off from NATO. How worried are you about that piece of land at the moment?
Yes, we feel like we feel sandwiched between heavily militarized Kaliningrad region. We see a lot of Russian troops there. We see military equipment, even tactical nuclear weapons are there.
You know that for sure?
Yes, I think already several years Russians brought their nuclear tactical weapons.
Which is missiles. Right next door to Lithuania.
Yes, not only Lithuania, but I would say Baltic region too. And on the other hand, we see Belarus, which has a country, independent country that does not exist anymore. After the elections in 2020, just Lukashenko and his government do not have any signs of independence, and they are just but the province of Russian Federation. So what does it mean militarily? It means that Russian military forces can use Belarusian soil as a platform to attack neighboring countries, what they are actually doing right now from the Belarus. So the same is also applicable for Lithuania, Poland, and other countries of the region. So we do not have any time to react, because military calculation changed dramatically, and this is the reason why we are saying, look, the situation changed very evidently, and we have to react. Instead of talking all the time about deterrence, we have to talk about forward defense in this part of eastern flank of NATO.
Well, for the deterrence, you only had like a couple of thousands of NATO troops in Lithuania until now. That's, of course, not going to be enough, right, if there's an invasion. It's basically only meant to slow down any attack. What do you need from NATO to protect your country and to protect the Baltics?
We need more troops, as you rightly mentioned. Those several thousand soldiers are not enough, because the Russian capacities outpace our capacities by several times. We need also military equipment, and I would say the kind of equipment which allows us to switch from the air policing regime to air defense regime. And of course, this is very ambitious task, to create air defense systems here in the Baltic regions. The region, and this is probably one of the priorities. At least I believe that this is one of the priorities of the NATO as an organization. And they hope very much that we will bring forward this agenda and this topic in the coming NATO summit taking place in Madrid in June.
Can you be more specific? How many troops are you asking for, and what kind of military equipment?
We are talking, and this is not only our discussion, internal discussion, but this is also discussion on the NATO level, to turn battle groups into brigade. So for Lithuania, it would mean the brigade. Would you ask me, if you would ask me about our possibility to accommodate these troops? Yes, we are working on it, and we already decided.
It would mean thousands of troops here, right? Maybe up to 8,000?
It would mean much higher number of troops, but we already building the necessary camps. We also have the special law on new training area in Rudninkai, which is, by the way, closely to the Suwalki Gap. And all these infrastructure elements are needed in order to be ready to accommodate a much larger amount of military equipment and to have additional military troops here in Lithuania. This is the responsibility, first of all, by Germany, because this country is leading EFP presence here in Lithuania. But we are talking with American troops too, because our strongest ally within NATO is United States. As you know, United States have also some military troops here.
But there was always a reason why there were not many NATO troops here in the Baltics, in Lithuania, because it was always a very sensitive balance between deterrence and not posing a threat to Russia, because Russia feels NATO is coming too close to its borders. Vladimir Putin has said it many times. Isn't this increasing the risk? If you have more NATO troops here on your territory, would that not increase your risk instead of decreasing?
Yes, Russians are using this rhetoric in order to scare us and to probably intimidate, just in order to stop increasing military equipment here in the eastern region, eastern flank of NATO. But I don't think we should follow this kind of manipulation and disinformation, because, as I mentioned, military troops or military equipment in Kaliningrad outpaces our capabilities by several times. So before the war in Ukraine, there was a consideration, and maybe it was correct, that it is possible to reinforce in case of emergency, in case of possible military intervention, we can bring additional forces and which will be able to defend together with our national forces our territory. But having in mind those strategic changes, as I described in Belarus, in Kaliningrad, I think we don't have time to reinforce, and this is a reason why we are asking for boots on the ground.
But it's against the founding act between Russia and NATO from 1997, which said that there shouldn't be too many NATO forces close to the Russian border and also not too close. Are you not violating this founding act?
We are not violating this because this is responsibility of both sides. And one country does not have any right to increase the capabilities to intimidate and to attack neighboring countries and to require and to ask the other side to do nothing or to just to passively watch what is happening. I think we should understand that ambitions to restore the empire are still there. Ukrainians are fighting very hard, fighting with this kind of ambitions. They are doing very well. They are fighting a heroic fight battle with this big country called Russia. And I think the fate of Ukraine and the fate of Europe will be solved there in the battlefields in Ukraine.
I don't know if you heard, but Vladimir Putin told this story about a trapped rat, that he had this experience in his youth when he was cornering a rat and the rat attacked him. Basically, he's using this analogy, of course, to show that, you know, Russia could be feeling like that, feeling trapped. Are you worried that it could escalate or that even nuclear weapons could be used?
Yes, we cannot ignore or exclude any possibilities. I still believe that maybe there is some sort of rational thinking, if you would allow me to express it like this way, although I see that what is happening now is just very difficult to explain by rationally. So there's no evidence. There's no one practical example which shows that NATO as an organization is aggressive. And we have a lot of evidence that Russia is doing this. Just starting from the wars in Chechnya first, then the second, then Georgia 2008, then Crimea and Donetsk-Luhansk frozen conflicts in 2014, Transnistria in Moldova. We have a lot of practical evidence which shows that you cannot believe, you cannot trust this regime.
Confirms my question about the threat that it could escalate into an even bigger war and even a nuclear war.
But you know, if we will do nothing, it will be direct invitation for Putin to proceed.
Finally, I want to ask you, because you've been asking about a no-fly zone from NATO. You have also asked Germany directly to send Leopard tanks to Ukraine. None of it has happened. How much support do you feel from NATO in case your country is going to be in trouble? If you already see the divisions within NATO, also within the EU, if you look at the gas, Germany is still buying gas from Russia.
We wouldn't be so pessimistic.
It's not a united front against Russia. Are you frustrated or disappointed?
I am not frustrated. I understand that we have 27 countries of European Union on the table, and they have not only different opinions, but they have different situation. And I am really optimistic because I can follow these changes of attitude, changes of opinion, because I can witness that some of my colleagues three, 4 months ago, we are talking about possible engagement of Russia into different fields. Now I do not see and do not hear any talks about engagement of Russia anymore.
That's
and
an end.
Many of them
There's
are
an end
delivering.
To diplomacy. There will no diplomacy, possibility for
you know, as I mentioned, the fate of Ukraine will be solved not in the cabinets, it will be solved in the battlefields. Unfortunately, this is the case. But looking at my partners in European Union, I should say that the big revolution in Minsk already happened. We have woken up, and I think this is most important looking forward.
President Gitanas Nausėda from Lithuania, thank you very much for talking to us.
Thank you very much.